With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving. At your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Hi, Paul Dennett here. Just letting you know that Cricket Unfiltered is now on Patreon. If you are a fan of our show and would like to support us with a few dollars each month, go to patreon.com/cricketunfiltered or click the link in the show notes on your podcast app.
Menas here, our Patreon supporters will also get some pretty cool bonus content. Paul will be doing a series of cricket history podcasts.
And Menas will be doing long-form interviews with leading cricket personalities.
All of these shows, plus other bonus features, will be available exclusively to our Patreon supporters.
So if you want some great extra content, or if you just love the show and would like to help support us financially, please go to patreon.com/cricketunfiltered.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm Andrew Mensel, joined by Jaleesa Apps, the battler from Boora. Jaleesa, how are you?
Yes, I'm good. You know, it's not the first time I've been called the battler from Boora. And I have to say, last week, I actually really enjoy missing out on the podcast because it means I get to listen to it. And last week, I did hear you sledging me, and predictably, Paul, once again, is very, you know, on it, just like very measured, defending me. But I have to go against you, Paul. I am bad at technology. So whilst I appreciate your defense of me and you're always getting, as we always gang up on Menace, I also always appreciate that too. But I have to say, I'm not actually bad with technology. I'm just really bad at having phones, and so I like to drop and smash my phones at least once a year, and I'm working off an iPhone 6 at the moment, so I'm back in like 2013. It's a real joy.
You're back in like 1985. You don't even have a computer.
Well, no, but you don't really need, and like, I honestly, I'd live off the grid if I could.
And you heard the laugh there of Paul Dennett, Jaleesa's defender. How are you, Paul?
Oh, good. Guys, it's been an emotional night for me. I really enjoyed watching the cricket.
Did you lose a multi?
No, I won. I won on India. I had some money on India. But the reason it was emotional is that my whole life I've never owned any pets and never had any desire to. And we are currently minding a puppy. And
that's so good.
It's so good for everyone. Like, I respect the puppy. I wish it well. But I just don't think I'm an animal person. So it's been,
No.
I was trying to watch the cricket and the dog has taken a fascination for me that it wants to come up and spend time. I think it's sensed that I'm sort of a bit nervous around it. So Yes, it was. It's very hard to try to follow the commentary and follow the cricket and put bets on when a strange dog is running around your feet.
Paul, I can't believe you're not an animal person. I don't ever trust people who are not animal people, and I never got this vibe from you, and you're such a gentle soul. I'm so shocked.
No, I'm not an animal person. I like them. I'm just a bit sort of, I think I have a couple of bad experiences with dogs when I was a kid, stray dogs at a holiday place we're at that were sort of chasing me and stuff, and I've just been a bit wary of them. So, you know, maybe my wife is insistent that I will soon fall in love with this puppy and everything will change. She's at this moment gesturing to me saying that the puppy's hearing what I'm saying and that you know, the puppy's not.
Yeah, don't say it in front of the puppy.
My daughter's giving me the thumbs down as well.
No, I'm with them. And Mena's actually, like, we obviously had it for people that wouldn't know this. We have a group text going, but Mena's often texts me, not in the group text, just pictures of Charlie. We don't ever have any chats, but pictures of Charlie, his beautiful 19-year-old cat. So, Paul, if I'm not getting pictures of this puppy by the end of the day, I'm going to be filthy.
Right. I'll definitely send some pictures through.
Thank you.
You can drop them in the group chat.
Okay. Maybe. All right.
We've got a lot to get through in Cricket Unfiltered, as always. I've got some grabs from Usman Khawaja, Alex Hales, James Faulkner, and even Ricky Ponting to go over. James Faulkner just buried the head coach of the Hurricanes last week. Absolutely buried him. So we're going to listen to all that. Then we're going to bring it on home with some viewer mail and can't let it go. But let's start with this crazy notion that Paul wants to kick things off with.
Go on.
That's rhetorical. I don't believe this, but I've just sort of said, I noticed that Michael Vaughan has come out in the press today and hammered England, and there's the whole feeling that, what's the point of them coming out here? And I've just sort of said, ironically, in the notes, should we disinvite England to the Ashes and invite someone else instead, such as New Zealand or Scotland? I've then immediately said, no, I don't think so. So I still think that England have a chance out here, but it was a particularly disappointing effort from them. They once again were so defence-minded, and that the game sort of left them for dead and they got bowled out. India, stunning. So for those of you who didn't catch up on it, that India has beaten England in the fourth test match to take a 2-1 lead in that series. So that's on the back of beating Australia in Australia. To beat England now in England, they have done it before, but it's still a pretty rare occurrence. So there's no doubt that this Indian side is the best side in the world and the best Indian team ever.
Now, you've also written on the notes, Paul, Menas, can you rank Jarvo's three appearances in order of which made you most furious? Now, it's funny because you two thought I was this sort of ogre, you know, raining on everyone's fun when he first wandered out onto Lords, and I said they should throw the book at him. Maybe I said it on Cricket Daily. I said it somewhere. They should throw him in jail, whatever, throw the key away. And then his third appearance, he runs out, tries to bowl a ball and runs into Johnny Bairstow and almost knocks him over. He could have injured him. I mean, this guy's a pest. They shouldn't have laughed at the first place. He should have been chucked in London Bridge or the Tower of London and left there.
You realise, man, is that that's going to require me 5 minutes to once again search out the beep function and line it up to delete that swear word of yours. Thanks, mate.
It's usually me doing that.
But yeah, I just thought that was a bad look, and quite seriously, it does show why you need to take these matters very seriously. You can't just laugh at it when someone wanders out with players. Clearly, security at English grounds is not good enough.
Yeah, clearly that's right, but it's still funny. It's still possible to say that he shouldn't have done it, but especially the first time when he was just standing there looking so gormless on the field, and you thought, how did he get there? I found it funny. And even this last one, the moment that he ran onto the field, it's disgraceful what he did. And plus, he's got a terrible bowling technique. I don't think he can clearly be much of a cricket fan if he can't bowl. And then he collided into Johnny Bairstow. It's utterly unacceptable. They should throw the book at him. But I still found it funny.
Fair enough. Maybe I don't have a sense of humour.
My favourite Johnny Bairstow moment was in 2019 when I was at the Ashes and in the Holly stand, which is the raucous stand at Birmingham, a bloke walked by who looked, he had a bit of red hair and he looked slightly like Johnny Bairstow. And someone yelled out, "It's Johnny Bairstow!" And at that time, Johnny Bairstow was actually batting, so it clearly wasn't. And the whole crowd roared for this guy and sang the, "Oh, Johnny Best, oh, you are the love of my life" song to him. And this guy had these like 5 seconds of fame simply because he had a passing resemblance to Johnny Best. It was always a special moment for me.
Yeah, well, clearly a few pints deep into their day during that. All right, well, let's get into the cricket headlines brought to you by Piccolo Podcasts. First one is that news is starting to emerge about the beginning of the domestic season that the Marsh Cup will be postponed. Usman Khawaja was saying recently when he was announced as Thunder skipper that he thinks that they're just going to try and get some games away and that they don't really want to go into a hub. So I think you could see a situation where they're just sort of navigating state borders and whoever sort of can play each other, they'll just let them play.
And I think that makes sense that they've just got to be pragmatic, get as much cricket as they can in whatever way they can. And, you know, I know you love the competition, Menas, and I've over the years loved it a lot as well. But I suppose if, in terms of priorities, it's the first one that'll go.
That's right. They need some red ball cricket to get ready for the Ashes, and the Marsh Cup's probably not going to be able to, you know, move up the priority chain. So I'm happy for them. You know, we could see some funky scheduling where, you know, WA plays South Australia twice if their borders open, and I think Queensland and South Australia is open, so they might play each other, and, you know, New South Wales and Victoria might be able to get some exemptions to play each other. But it's going to be a very peculiar start to the summer, no doubt.
Yeah, I think I agree. They just need to get the schedule as done as much as they can and be pretty flexible with it. The one thing I think about this summer is I wonder if we're going to see all the broadcasting uproar that we saw last year when we saw Seven not wanting to pay the full price for the broadcast, because no doubt the Big Bash is, I think we can look at it now and go, well, the Big Bash is going to be affected by international players not wanting to come in and do quarantine and that kind of thing. I know in other sports it's a problem at the moment. So I wonder if we're going to have this whole saga play out again. I really hope that we don't, because I think it's very damaging.
I don't think we will, though. Channel 7, they were completely bowled out by Cricket Australia. It was a terrible batting performance by 7. The ratings were astronomical. The cricket, all the games got played, and in the end, they went to arbitration and lost. So I think 7 would be smart to just keep their mouth shut and do the best they can at covering the game.
They might agitate a little bit, though. Maybe it won't go to the extent that it did before. But if you think broadcasters everywhere aren't trying to save money where they can, I think that would be naive, even though that they weren't successful as much as they would have liked to be before. I imagine that they will still agitate a little bit.
Menas, if you're going to use sporting analogies for Channel 7, you can't use cricket. The hierarchy, they don't know anything about cricket. They, even when they're talking about cricket, they use Aussie rules analogies. You need to come up with a few Australian rules football analogies for them to make sense to them.
Yeah, well, hopefully they won't kick another own goal this summer.
That's not Aussie rules, mate.
What?
That's called a rush behind.
They might have a few more legs to stand on this time, though, because particularly with the Ashes being up in the air, if that gets changed at all, then they definitely have got more legs to stand on than last season when everything ended up going ahead pretty normally.
Lisa, don't worry. Despite Paul's best intentions, we won't be playing Scotland in a 5-test match series next summer.
But if we're playing you know, a lot of the England players won't come out, and then they end up playing a very B team, maybe Channel 7 have got more of a leg to stand on.
All right, so some news has been announced since our last show. Usman Khawaja has been announced as Sydney Thunder skipper. Alex Hales and Sam Billings have both been signed as their overseas players. And Usman Khawaja jumped on a Zoom press conference late last week. And look, I put some tough questions to him. Here's the first one. Usman, there's a lot of reception to your YouTube video about Justin Langer. What sort of feedback have you received from sort of players within the Aussie team?
Good question. I haven't received any feedback. I have no receipts. I can't really answer that question for you.
No, okay. Were you surprised then at the reception from the video?
No. It was. When I was doing it, I knew it was a hot topic. I knew that it was going to attract a little bit of attention. That was quite obvious. But I just felt like I had to get some things, because I kept getting people from YouTube saying, you know, you're not in the team because Justin Lane hates you or this and that. And I wanted to clear that up first and foremost. And then secondly, I felt like I had a bit of insight to give into the topic, and I did. And I was, you know, as open, as honest as I could. And that was pretty much as simple as that. It wasn't too much agendas or thinking too much about anything else. It was pretty much that.
Good questions, Manus. Well done.
Thank you. I think reading between the lines, you probably heard from some people in the Australian team.
Well, he either heard from some people, or he's just so irrelevant to them that they didn't. They were left like, oh, Usman's, you know, making, you know, out there speaking his mind again. Who cares? Like, I wonder if they were just like, whatever, we don't really care. He's not in the team, because that's what I thought.
He might be soon, though. I mean, you read the press speculation. There's every chance that he's in contention for the first test side.
Well, Langer probably is pretty happy with him now.
He'll be captain.
Yeah, he'll be, you know, hello guys, how are you going? Awkward entry.
All right. Now, also, I asked Usman Khawaja about how he thinks the Sydney Thunder will shape up next summer.
Yeah, look, I've got to be honest, last year was really disappointing. I thought we had a team to at the least make the finals, if not win the finals. I thought we had a great team. Things just didn't fall into place. Timing was a bit off. We just struggled at the back end of the tournament, which is disappointing. It can really happen in T20 cricket. Even the year we won BBL 05, we just peaked at the right time. So it was disappointing as a team last year. But I think, you know, obviously the bones are still there this year. Hale's a big player for us. You know, we've got a lot of good young cricketers. We've got a lot of cricketers in the side, have done well over a long period of time. You know, obviously, Sandy's been awesome for the Thunder, representing Australia, had experience like Ben Cutting in there. So, you know, you can never know in T20 cricket, because it is a fickle game. But fingers crossed, everyone's fit and healthy. If that's the case, I think you still have a very good team to do big things in the game. Because I think looking at the side and the balance, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there to get very far into the tournament, if not win.
I have to agree with Usman. They look stacked.
The only thing might be if if the summer comes to pass in the weirdness of that could be that Hales and Billings could be ending up playing for England.
They're the only ones here.
Yeah.
Well, I think the Thunder look like a really strong team, and he mentioned a few names there, but just Hales and Khawaja at the top with Billings down the order and Daniel Sams. You add in Ben Cutting and Tanvir Sanger. They've got a really decent lineup. Both Sydney teams should be pretty competitive. So Alex Hale signed for the Thunder. He also spoke to the media, and I asked him a question. And Alex Hales is a great guy. Like, I've worked out why Owen Morgan doesn't like him. Morgan has zero personality, some personality, and therefore Morgan's intimidated because he's the most boring, vacuous bloke I've ever seen. Hales was so nice in the press conference. Anyway, let's have a listen. I heard Darren Lehman saying this week that he thinks some players might be reticent to come out with the quarantine. How did you sort of come to the decision?
Yeah, I can get it as well. It's obviously incredibly tough for guys, you know, people with young families and stuff to be separated for such a long time. I think I'm in terms of that kind of situation, I'm fortunate in that, you know, I don't have any kids and I'm a single man, so I'll be fresh off a 2-month break as well. So in terms of this, you know, quarantining and bubbles, I think I'll be as fresh as I can be. And it's, you know, obviously not looking forward to doing a quarantine, but I feel like I'll be in as good a headspace as I can be to take it on. But, you know, I get why guys are struggling with it. You know, the stint I did last year in Perth was, you know, an incredibly tough 2 weeks. So I can see why guys, you know, do struggle with it. But I feel like I'll be in as good a place as I can be to be equipped with it and hopefully, you know, get through it and enjoy myself once I'm out there.
Well, good he's doing it. But do you think we could see any adjustments to the quarantine laws by the Big Bash? Do you think if we hit 80% double vaxxed, we could have a different situation where at least maybe some players can home quarantine?
Well, you won't unless it's available to the general public, because that would be a terrible look if you had people coming in that couldn't see their dying loved ones without doing quarantine. But then you've got cricketers that just won't happen. So I think if it's available to the general public, they'll be treated the same if they're double vaxxed with whatever vaccine we also have approved.
Yeah, I think that it's just so hard to foresee what might happen. It's still quite a few months away, and a lot can happen in 3 months. So if the vaccination rates get as high as they should and that things change quickly, then anything's possible. I find it amazing still that Alex Hales is out of the England side, out of England contention. I don't know what he did. I mean, the documented things of what he did aren't that bad.
So not in comparison to some.
Exactly. And the fact that they didn't pick him a few months ago when the COVID scare resulted in them having to play a side of almost entirely debutants, that's I just find that bizarre. As to Owen Morgan, I think he's a great captain and he just seems like an intense guy. Remember that time, Menes, when we were in one of our first ever little press group gatherings and he walked in and one of the first questions someone said to him was, you know, are you going to have a beer with... I know Kevin Peterson's in town. Are you going to have a beer with him after the game tonight? And he just sort of looked at them, paused for 2 seconds and went, no. This is fantastic.
That was the game he hit a six off the final ball at Thunder Stadium to win the game for the Thunder. It was quite incredible.
I thought it was something interesting that you pointed out last week, Paul, when you were talking about quarantine and players maybe not coming for the big bash and that kind of thing, when you were saying, well, you know, it is funny listening to people in England. I think we've all got friends or whatever in England. They're like, what's wrong with you guys? And I find that quite a funny question. Like, what's wrong? How did Australia bungle this so badly? It's like, oh, no, we just don't have dead bodies. That's the difference. So even though everyone's quite critical about quarantine and coming and players having to do quarantine when they've been open for months, blah, 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 it's like, yeah, but we're not quarantining with, like, 50,000 people dead, are we? Like,
well, that's exactly the point, that, yes, we screwed up the vaccine and the federal government should have gotten miles more of the vaccine in, so we shouldn't be where we are. But given that that happened, then I think we had no choice but to have lockdowns that we've got now. And these lockdowns and the state border closures and everything are a nightmare. But the alternative is to go down the path that many other countries have gone down, when, as you said, there is just people dying everywhere. And I'd rather what we've done.
Yeah.
Paul, you brought up about Hales, and didn't he fail a drug test in the lead up to the 2019 World Cup? And that was...
Yeah.
Led to this fracture. And I think there's just a bit of jealousy from Morgan, because obviously Hales was invited to a party and Morgan's never been to a party.
No, I mean, yeah, like, he shouldn't have done that, but it was a recreational drug, and I can see why they would have kicked him out of the World Cup for that. So listen, we are serious about winning this. The fact that you're out there clearly getting ready to party, we don't want you. But God, you know, it's 2 years ago. You'd think that after so many other people have had so many other things forgiven, there must be something more at play than that.
Yeah, well, I think Morgan just doesn't like him. All right, I got one more clip from Alex Hales. You know, I'm fascinated with the 100. I'm just curious if what you thought of the 100 format and if you think there's anything the Big Bash could sort of look at that worked well.
It was really, really good, to be honest. It was a huge success. Really enjoyed the format. There was a couple of rules I did enjoy. I enjoyed that, you know, once if a batter hits one up in the air and gets caught, it doesn't matter if they cross, you know, the new batter faces regardless, which I think, you know, could be brought into cricket everywhere. I also quite enjoyed the, you know, two sets of five balls or two overs in a row at the same end. It definitely added to, you know, the speed of the game and made it a bit quicker. So, you know, there are two rules I particularly enjoyed, but yeah, I think, you know, it's got people talking about cricket, and it seemed to attract a new, you know, a new clientele of followers to the game, which is exactly what we wanted to do in England, to try and grow the game.
I want two overs from one end next summer. I don't see why we can't do it.
Oh, he missed an opportunity then. What he should have said straight away, he should have said, yeah, I think that I've always thought the Big Bash is 3 1/3 overs too many, and now this has proved it.
I'm really disappointed with you, Menes, because I think the obvious follow-up questions is, and what about last man stands? Any rules? Do you think you should be able to get two people out with one ball? This is why I need to get on these press conferences.
We need double plays, Alex.
Yeah, we did. We should have gone in as a team.
But would you both be happy if they just said, look, we're going to bowl two overs from each end now to save time? Because they keep complaining that the 20-over games are going a bit long once you add in breaks and stuff. Why not shave a bit of time like that?
The problem is, I think that that would not go down very well with Channel 7, where that they would be banking on an ad after each over. And to suddenly cut that in half, then the revenue would diminish substantially.
Well, I sort of just want to hear the opinion of someone who's a bowler, not a batsman, on that. Would they like that?
Yeah, I guess you could. You can still switch bowlers, but maybe not change ends.
I'll tell you the one thing that I really, and I've said this before, but that I loved about the 100 was that having it up on the board the moment that the time that the overs need to be bowled in. Otherwise, the every over that's not bowled by that time, you have one fielder less out of the circle. And I said this on Twitter the other day, they should just immediately bring that into Test cricket. But the first day of this Test match, there was nothing doing, but England only bowled 25 overs in the first 2 hours. There's no reason for them not to have bowled 30. If it's up to me, I'd say, right, that's five overs that you're short. Straight after lunch, we have some penalties. And I think one penalty that would work would be to rob them of two fielders. So you go out there with only nine for the first five overs after lunch. See how you like that. They would immediately start bowling more quickly, and the problem would be solved.
Agree. All right, now heading down south to Tasmania, there's been some controversy there. It's all kicked off. James Faulkner was not, well, he wasn't able to come to an agreement to play for the Hurricanes next summer. So unfortunately, it looks like not only will James Faulkner not play for the Hurricanes, but he won't be in the Big Bash at all because most of the other clubs have sorted out their lists, which is a huge disappointment.
Their what?
What was that?
Their squad.
Oh, AFL.
I wish you hadn't heard that.
if you edit that out, I'll be filthy.
Yeah, so
kicking goals, Menes. You're kicking goals, mate.
Yeah, another one. So James Faulkner, and he did so well in the, I don't know if anyone remembers, but in the Pakistan Super League when it resumed, he was taking wickets for fun. So unfortunately, we won't see him in the Big Bash. And boy, he was on a show, an SEN show called Jack and Payne, which has Jack Rewalt and Tim Payne, the Australian skipper. So there was an interesting dynamic with Payne conducting this interview, but Faulkner didn't hold back. Let's have a listen.
Yeah, look, I found that pretty hard to take when I first heard it on the phone. I found it pretty disrespectful for what I've sort of given to Tasmanian cricket. I've put my heart and soul into it, and to hear the initial offer, and that's what it all comes down to. Yeah, it sort of cut pretty deep.
And then he goes on to talk about the head coach, Adam Griffith, and again, doesn't miss.
After saying that I've got no issue with the board and the players and the supporters, I think you can probably read between the lines there, Jack. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm going to tell the truth. But I think when you watch the news and you see, well, I thought one of my mates as well as the head coach say that the bowling group and the team have performed really well without me, first of all, and then secondly saying we need to move on and that he didn't really care, that cuts as deep. That's like sticking a knife straight in my back. I don't think it's not called for.
What a backstabbing in Australian cricket lately. was larger about Langer. And now this, I mean, to me, and I'll be interested in both your opinions, this is a massive loss. I mean, Faulkner should not be lost to the Big Bash.
I agree. And those performances that he put in the PSL, I think, put to bed any speculation that he was a spent force. He has had injuries in recent years, and he's certainly been not the player that he once was. And his batting has lost a bit of its sparkle, but I would still have him in any Big Bash franchise. I think he adds to it. It just seems that, okay, if Tasmania, if the Hurricanes made the decision that they wanted to cut him, that's fine. You know, there's been decisions in the past where controversially players have been let go that not everyone agrees with. But it just seems as though they handled it really poorly, that you would think that they could have just brought him in and had a meeting and said, listen, we're not going to proceed with you. Lay it all out on the table. He wouldn't have liked it, but it wouldn't have turned out to be this way.
Well, my understanding is, though, it's not that they didn't give him an offer. He just didn't like the offer.
But he's making it seem like it was an insultingly low offer, that it was, you know, a fraction of what he expected, and that it was almost like, reading between the lines, it's almost like he's thinking they gave him that offer intending for him to refuse it so that they could then wash their hands of it.
So But my, what's the minimum wage for the Big Bash? Is it like, isn't it like the, I know the women's one is like, you know, isn't 30,000. So what's the men's one?
I don't know the minimum wage.
For like how insulting, what I'm sort of trying to get that is how insulting could it have been? You know,
well,
like
if it's a fifth of what he was on last year, for example, you know, then.
Yeah, well, like there's a salary, I don't know. I just feel like there's salary caps in every sport.
So callous.
If they didn't think that he was worth, if they were like, no, we want to spend, there's a salary cap if they want to spend it on other players. I think sometimes you've just got to, I mean, it's James Faulkner. It's not Steve Smith. Like, you know, yeah, he's done really well. Yeah, but there's a lot of really good bowlers out there. I'm not that upset, to be honest. Like, if he was that good, he could find somewhere else. If he hasn't, he hasn't. Like, sometimes you just got to accept what you're worth.
I think
to put it in NRL terms, if there's a player on 600 grand and they decided, oh, look, you know, we've got salary cap issues, and they said, here, mate, yeah, here's your offer for next season, 75 grand. And he's gone,
well,
what?
Well, we can put that in real salary. We can put that in NRL terms because in the past few days, Tarek Sims, who is a State of Origin player, has been cut, has been told by the Dragons, we don't see you on a long-term deal. If you want to go and find somewhere else, that's fine. Go and find somewhere else. I think this is the same thing. If he can find someone to pay him more, go find someone to pay you more. Otherwise, you're not worth it.
But he can't now because the window is shut. That maybe they could have handled it more like the Dragons and just sort of and said it to him in that way rather than, oh, here's your offer. And if it's insultingly low as he's implying, I can understand his anger.
But the window isn't shut. He can still find somewhere else if he's worth it.
The offer was delayed and therefore, you know, they didn't say to him at the end of summer, we don't want you next year. They said, we'll get your contract together. And
there's still a lot of space in a lot of Big Bash teams. And we'll see that fill up with like people like, you know, Stark and you know, like a lot of teams haven't signed their big players. If he is worth that, he will get signed. If he's not, he's not.
Wow. I feel sorry for your employer. Co-workers once you go into management, Jaleesa.
Well, you're worth what the market's willing to pay for you. I don't feel bad for him because if he's worth more than the offer, he will get it. Because a lot of those sides haven't signed their big marquee players yet. Like the Australian cricket side isn't signed to people yet. So if he's worth what they're worth, he'll find it.
Well, I think he's going
to. And is what you're saying that there's an embargo now?
I think the embargo's lifted now.
Oh, so what's the issue with the embargo then?
The point is the list was filled up now, so he was not told.
The what? The squads?
The squads aren't all filled up, though.
Well, that's what he said. He said they were. It's too late.
No, but they're not. We'll see people like, we will see, like, you know, the Sixers will sign, you know, they'll be like, look at this, we've got Mitchell Stark. Once all the scheduling and they negotiate with players what they want to do and all that kind of thing, there's plenty of rooms in squads, not lists. And if he's worth that, he will find another squad, not a list. But, you know, if the offer's too low for you, that's fine. Don't take it. He didn't. But don't whinge that you didn't take it.
Wow. Batlam from Boora was fired up. All right, so that was James Faulkner taking aim at Tasmanian cricket or the Hurricanes. And last headline, Afghanistan are still likely to host Australia and the West Indies in a T20 series in the lead up to the T20 World Cup. Likely they'll play in Qatar or the UAE. And the Afghanistan Cricket Board has also confirmed that they would still like to play their first ever test against Australia beginning on November 27th at Belrive Oval. But yesterday, Monday, Tasmanian Premier Peter Goodwine said, I have very real concerns as to whether or not the state should hold that match without some very clear commitments being made around it in terms of the future of women's sport. And he's referring to in Afghanistan. And he says that he intends to speak to the local Hazara community and chat to get their view of the match. And I guess both of you, what's your initial view on whether Australia should play Afghanistan?
I think it'd be disappointing given the first test under the circumstances that it is. I would have liked it to have been a bigger occasion where you could have crowds and it could be like a real celebratory thing for being the first one. I don't like that it's going to have to be like probably, you know, all negotiated with quarantine and borders and probably no crowds. I would like it delayed if it meant it could be a bigger spectacle.
No, but I think the point is, should we be playing at all? But with the Taliban taking over, and if there's a feeling that potentially if they are also going to, say, for example, ban the Afghanistan women's team from playing, that by engaging with the Afghanistan men's side, it's sort of allowing a form of soft diplomacy from the Taliban that they can sort of say, oh, everything's still normal, we're still playing sport, even if they are actively stopping the women's team from playing. And I think that it's a very difficult situation. There's the parallel. It's not a perfect parallel at all, but with South Africa, where by stopping all forms of sporting relations with South Africa, it's widely accepted that that helped to slowly bring about the end of apartheid. I think it just needs to be up to some much more geopolitically expert people than me to sort of work it out whether or not it would be the right thing to do, because it would be heartbreaking to ban the men's side. And I'd feel that really, really bad about that. But if that's the right thing to do, then that's what should be done.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a bit torn. Maybe it's for the men's side itself to take a stand. Like if rather than like the Afghanistan men's side to decide whether it's appropriate for them to play rather than us decide whether it's appropriate to play them. I don't know. It's a really hard one, because then we had Afghanistan athletes compete in the Paralympics, which was really good. Is that kind of, can you draw a comparison with that? I don't know. It's a tough one. Again, I think you're right, Paul. I think it's like more geopolitical minds need to figure that out rather than sporting minds.
Yeah, it needs to be an international sort of decision. But there's also that hybrid solution of where, like with the Russian athletes in the Olympics, they competed, but they didn't technically compete for Russia, that I suppose the Afghanistan men's side could play, but in some different format. I don't think it can be up to the players, though, because if they were to sort of unilaterally decide not to play, that would put their own families in such danger that I don't think that they can be asked to do that.
I think it's the ICC need to work out what's going to happen with the Afghanistan women's team. And if they are no longer able to play, then they would have to think about whether Afghanistan deserves test status. That's the way I see it.
I honestly think that, all the COVID problems might be the big, like, might sort of, before it even gets to that point, that might rule out it going ahead rather than
a nice way out.
It would be, wouldn't it? I mean, it would be a very convenient way out of no one making a really tough stance. But I actually think that could come down to ruling it out before it even gets to that stage, which I don't know. It's a tough one.
It is a tough one. All right. So we've been stumped by that last one. We're going to take a quick break. Then we'll be back with viewer mail and Can't Let It Go. Just want to remind you, if you want to send us any questions, any topics you want us to talk about, anything you want to throw at either of us, you can head to Twitter at Oz Cricket Pod. That's AUS Cricket Pod. We're also on Instagram on Oz Cricket Pod as well. And you can email ozcricketpod@gmail.com. All right, we'll be back in a moment. You're listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm Menas. I'm with Jaleesa and Paul. And we got some messages after our anniversary episode the week before last. So Sam has written in, Langer has to go, Menas. The sooner they get Gillespie, Punter or McDonald in, the better. So another one on my side. James, geez, Menas, you and Langer are cut from the same cloth. What an insane rant. I didn't listen back, so I have no idea how insane it was. And then one for Jaleesa, Paul Bonsall. Great episode, guys. Looking forward to angry Jaleesa apps in the coming weeks. Your turn, Jaleesa. Well, James Faulkner copped it, that's for sure. Well,
James Faulkner would disagree.
All right, now it's Can't Let It Go time. That little bit of cricket news you just can't let go through to Josh Inglis. Jaleesa, what's your Can't Let It Go?
My Can't Let It Go is a little bit of a funny one, and it's a tweet that comes from Paul's best mate, not Ollie Davies, his other best mate, Dan Christian, who posted a picture with a tweet, George Bailey told me he was keen to improve the lines of communication between players and selectors. I didn't think that this was the way I was going to find out I'd been dropped, though. Bravo, George. And he's got a picture here from a newspaper from a cryptic crossword, and I don't know where the cryptic crossword was or what newspaper, but in clue 23, it says Indigenous Sydney Sixers and ex-Australian T20 all-rounder.
He's a legend. He should be captain. He should be captain for the Ashes.
So, and the answer was obviously Dan Christian. So that was quite funny one. Also, someone had a lot of people had replied with the answers to other clues, which was quite funny. All the comments were like, oh, just so you know, 19 across is this and 14 down is this. It's quite funny.
That's a good one. Paul, do you ever can't let it go?
Yeah. Just that last night, as England were beginning their runs chase, Michael Atherton, who is just about my favourite commentator, was asked, how should they approach this? And he gave the compulsory answer, which is they should just bat normally. And at lunch, if things are okay, slightly increase the tempo. And then at tea, assess the situation. If they need to get 5 and over and they've got, you know, maybe 8 wickets in hand, then maybe they can go for it. This is the conventional wisdom that you're almost not allowed to even contemplate that you're going for a runs chase. It's like a superstition that if you even indicate, yes, we're going for these runs, then you'll immediately lose. I think that needs to be turned on its head. Last night, on night 4, the pitch was as flat as a tack, and the start of day 5, it was the same thing. Because England went out with their usual openers, Burns and Hamid, who scored really, really slowly, they squandered those great conditions. And all of a sudden, midway through yesterday or day 5, when the ball started reverse swinging, they collapsed and they were nowhere near. Burns made 50 off 125. Hamid made 63 off 193. Now, on one hand, yes, they're the two top scorers of the side. Well done. But on the other hand, scoring it vastly under a strike rate of 50, it cost England any chance they had. I really reckon. And if you look as well, just before they came out to bat, the Indians beforehand, Shardul Thakur made 60 from 72. Umesh Yadav made 25 from 23. And Bumrah made 24 from 38. I know it's different when you're then coming out to bat and you're not a tail ender having a bit of a swing. But if they had said, right, let's just open up with, Root and Bairstow and get them to play normally or even go more aggressively than that, tell them, yes, we are going to go for these runs. We're not going to bat it out and survive. The 120-something overs, we're not going to bat those out. Let's actually go for the runs. That's our best chance of winning the game. And also our best chance of drawing the game because Kohli won't be able to have massively aggressive fields in. They do this all the time, England. Completely negative, completely defensive. And it was instructive. One of the commentators said that Mark Waugh just contacted him and said, if England don't go for these runs, then why are they even bothering playing cricket? Which I think was a pretty good expression.
I have to agree. England should have been more positive. I do see the value, though, in a top order laying the platform for the lower order. I mean, you cherry-pick those stats from the Indian order of Thakur, Yadav and Bumrah, but the foundation for them to play the way they played was laid by the top order. But I do think it comes down to intention. Were England going for the runs? And during that first session on the fifth day, they just weren't positive enough and it did put them behind and sort of took the win out of reach. So, yeah, I agree with your overall point, but I think you shouldn't undervalue what a good, solid top order can do.
Now, you've just cherry-picked those stats as well because in the first innings, Thakur scored even faster. He scored the fastest 50 in the history of cricket in England and he did it off no platform because that all collapsed. I think that the notion that that you've got to have that platform, it sometimes is relevant, but it doesn't always follow. I think that in this case, in this second innings, where it was so flat, and then it started to reverse swing, they'd squandered the opportunity for their best players and their most aggressive players to bat when the conditions suited.
Well, mate, all I want to point you to is some of Justin Langer's great times as part of the engine room in Australian cricket. You need a top three that is an engine room. And you're right, it doesn't always play out that way, but I still think it's important.
I'll tell you what, if Langer had opened the batting, Langer often scored much more quickly than people gave him credit for. I reckon if Langer had opened the batting on that flat pitch on day four, he would have gone along at a pretty brisk strike rate, and he would have done quite well. But he's obviously a bloody good player.
All righty, now, my can't let it go. Final bit of sound. Ricky Ponting was on the radio in Western Australia speaking to Adam Gilchrist and on an SEN show called Gilly and Goss. And have a listen to this. I think there's a little bit of a sly dig here at some of the cricketers around the world.
What an amazing job I reckon the Indians have done with handling their situation. I mean, those guys, they literally haven't been home. Rishabh Pant, before the IPL started, had 3 days at home since June last year. I think he had 3 days, and I don't think he went home after this IPL either, before he went to England, because if they went home, they had to quarantine again. So, but they've just, even what they did in Australia with a second and third 11 side, and the resilience they showed there, they are a tough breed these days. Don't worry about that. And you don't hear anything from them. You don't hear any moaning. No one's pulling out and going home, needing a break or needing the rest. They love playing for India. They love the game, and they love competing. And
what about that last sentence? You don't hear any moaning.
But I think that it differs from person to person. Rishabh Pant's 23, has no kids, and I compare his situation to Joss Butler, and I can understand why Joss Butler might not be all that keen to come out to Australia and quarantine when he just had the birth of his second child. I think that Ponting's point's well made, but you've got to look into each set of circumstances.
Yeah, I just think it's scary, though, because I think India, not only are they a great side, but they've got this attitude that Australia used to have where playing cricket for your country is seen as being the most important thing, more important than everything else, family, whatever. They're all just obsessed with playing for India. And, it seems to be a level above what maybe the Australian players feel towards playing for their country. And, when you get that, that desire that India have along with their skill and their population, they could be, about to enter, 10, 20 years of just complete, utter dominance.
That's a very good point. Where did you hear that from?
What a sad way to live.
Which bit?
Is that, are you just commenting on Menas and me separately? Or?
Yeah, I wasn't commenting on the topic at all. I'm just looking at you two going, what a sad way to live.
I'm not stealing your point. You said they could be dominant, right? I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying that, look at this from Ponting saying the players don't care. They don't even want to see their families. They just want to play cricket all the time.
No, but the point I'm making is that when you said suddenly as though they might dominate for 10 or 20 years, after having rubbished me all the time for suggesting that, I thought you were being ironic and amusing. And now I find out you're actually being earnest. That's a bit disturbing. What a sad way to live.
I was never rubbishing you saying they could dominate for 20 years. I think I often agreed. I think all I ever said was it's scary. I mean, it was...
Okay. Fair enough.
I would like to just clarify that I was saying what a sad way to live of cricket dominating your life. Not so obviously I was still talking about.
Yes, exactly.
No, I was just saying what a sad way to live if you just had so much desire not to get home. If that is, look, I think that Ponting is right. They've been incredibly resilient and they've really dug in and probably knowing that eventually the pandemic will end, they will get home, they will see everyone. But I don't really begrudge any cricketer who's decided not to play cricket for a period of time so that they can see their family, because it would be a very sad way to live if you didn't want to see your family. And also, you two are a sad way to live.
Well, on the satirical account that used to be on Facebook called the Park Cricketer, he had this thing. He was a fake character, but there was one thing where he said the coach said, right, we're doing catching practice now at the end of it's like a Tuesday night training. We've got to catch 25 in a row before we can go home. And he said, I kept on deliberately dropping them so I wouldn't have to go home and see my wife and kids.
All righty. Well, look, we'll let Jaleesa go. She's obviously spent too much time with us talking cricket today. So we'll wrap this up for Cricket Unfiltered.
Yeah, I'm just when I was saying what a sad way to live, I was actually just reassessing all my life choices and what I was doing on a Tuesday.
Did you go with the sledging last week, Jaleesa?
Yeah, you did sledge me last week. That was mean.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you turned up this week.
Well, do you like the fact that I text first today and I said, where is everyone? Not, you know, you were moaning last week that we weren't needy enough for you, and I text first today.
Absolutely. I was going to go and have lunch. I would have just missed the whole podcast, so thank you.
Yeah, well, that's secretly what Paul and I were hoping, but anyway.
Well, on that note, that's it for this edition of Cricket Unfiltered. Send us messages, send us questions. I've been joined by Jaleesa Apps, the hostess from the Channel 10, and Paul Dennett, and we'll be back next week.
Makes me sound like a flight attendant.
I know.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving. At your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.